years to come. I could have sat into the evening watching the two of them casting tender looks at one another across the table, both of them with a look in their eye that told how utterly incredulous they both were that, at last, they were together again. What amazed me most was that neither of them seemed to resent the choices they'd made all those years ago, or feel as if time had been wasted. It was as if those 50 years spent apart only served to reinforce how precious their remaining time was together, rather than to underline how much they'd missed. It was such a happy party, so full of hope and joy, that it felt impossible to head back to the flat and the humdrum of everyday life. But Tom's children had to take their kids home for supper and bed, and Jane and Tom were more than ready to return to the flat as husband and wife, to prepare for their honeymoon on the Amalfi Coast the following day. "Let's go to a club," I say to the girls, outside the hotel.
"Great idea," says Lizzie.
When Lizzie and I were at art college, she used to go clubbing well into the small hours, but always make 9 a.m. lectures, though generally with her hair in a mess, her PVC hot pants still on, and reeking of stale booze.
"I don't know," says Hannah. "I've work in the morning and Remy will be waiting for me at home."
"So call her and get her along too," says Kat, already hailing a cab.
"I probably shouldn't."
"Come on, Hannah," I say, as a cab draws up. "If I can, you can."
"Yeah, come on," says Lizzie,
the three of us climbing in, waiting to see what Hannah decides.
"Oh, go on then," she says, throwing caution to the wind. "It's not every day a 70-something woman marries the man she's loved for 5 decades.
"Exactly," I cry. "Some things just have to be celebrated. Mahikis, please." It takes barely a minute for the cab to make its way into Mayfair and deliver us outside the club on Dover Street, just a stone's throw from the Ritz.
"God, how long's it been since we were last here?" asks Hannah, as we're waved inside by the doorman.
"Wasn't it here that you and Simon kissed for the first time?"
asks Lizzie as we head towards the lounge. "Which was over 4 years ago, I say, remembering the moment well. Simon told me sometime later that he'd been planning it for weeks, but for me, it had been completely out of the blue. At that stage, he was just my boss's son, my new boss at that. I thought he was just being kind, making me feel part of the team by inviting me and my friends out to a club he liked. I had no idea he was into me."
"That kiss totally freaked you out," says Kat, laughing at the memory.
"I was so paranoid that Sir Hugo would fire me if he found out, or at least tell us to break it off." Entering the bar takes me straight back to that night. Simon and I had been sitting chatting, me thinking how nice it was of him to pay so much attention to the new girl. Simon, he told me later, trying to figure out how to kiss me. In the end, he'd leaned over and placed the softest kiss on my lips, testing the water. I'd been completely taken aback, but the kiss was so soft and tingly, and I'd had sufficient to drink, that I'd leaned in and kissed him back. Before I knew it, we were kissing in a way that probably wasn't appropriate for a public place.
"We spent days agonizing about it at home," says Lizzie. "I'm certain there wasn't a potential scenario left undiscussed."
"I was pretty freaked out, not just because of the work thing, but because of how much I liked him and all his old-fashioned charm and respectability."
"Do you remember how he used to jump up any time a lady entered the room?"
says Hannah.
"He was a regular jack-in-the-box," says Kat.
Up, down," says Hannah, and we all laugh.
"That wasn't all that was going up, down, if I remember rightly," says Lizzie, a cheeky twinkle in her eye.
"He definitely had stamina,"
I grin. But there's a pang of regret, too, that I didn't expect. I haven't thought about the early days with Simon for so long. How new and exciting it felt. Anyway, I don't think we've been back since, so I guess it's been 4 years since we were here.
4 years, says Hannah with a whistle. So much has happened since then.
You and Lizzie married, says Kat.
Neither of us had even met Remy or Jack back then,
says Hannah.
And you meeting Henry.
Simon and I splitting up, I say, because I can tell no one else wants to. And him now so serious with Edith.
Let's order drinks,
says Cat, sensing my mood beginning to dip. Deadbeat daiquiri for me, please, I say as Cat takes the other's orders and heads to the bar.
Things will get better, Bea, says Hannah. If today teaches us anything, it has to be that whoever is meant for you will come to you.
Maybe it's neither Simon nor Leo, says Lizzie. Maybe you're the one who's to have their thunderbolt moment.
Just like Tom in Four Weddings, says Hannah encouragingly, though I can tell she's not that convinced by the theory.
I think I might believe even less in thunderbolts than I do in the one.
Then maybe you're just not ready, says Lizzie. You always say it's about timing. Perhaps the person you're meant to be with isn't ready yet, and maybe you're not either.
I would like to get the jewelry business up and running, I say. Over the last month, I've had a few sales from the website I set up. It wouldn't take too many more to be able to go part-time at work.
And have a bit more time to be sure you're fully over Simon, says Hannah.
I say, my tone suggesting they might be right, but all I'm thinking is, maybe Leo just needs time to work things through with Britt and to get rid of all the wedding work before he's really ready himself.
The thought bolsters my spirits a bit,
as does the cocktail,
and before I know it, my dip in mood has gone. Remy made it after work, and she and Hannah are now glued to the dance floor. Unusually, Lizzie isn't dancing, but she's less concerned about Jack's tour. It's only Kat who can't quite get into the spirit of things.
You need to confront Henry, Kat, I say. Properly lay things on the table.
I've tried. It just makes him defensive.
I've absolutely nothing to go on other than a hunch. I glance furtively at Lizzie, who is sucking, surprisingly for her, on a mocktail. A look that doesn't go unnoticed by Kat.
What's going on? She asks.
Lizzie, I say, my tone suggesting that it's time she spoke up.
Liz,
asks Kat, when Lizzie isn't immediately forthcoming.
Okay, okay, she says, cracking and putting down her drink. Kat, I don't know how to say this, and I don't know that it's true, but there's a rumor going around at work that Henry is seeing one of the nurses.
Seeing, says Kat. Blood draining from her face. Lizzie puts up her hands.
I swear, that's all I know.
We haven't told you because there's been nothing to tell, I say. It's only a rumor, but...
Coupled with my hunch, it could be everything, she says, remarkably coolly.
Could be, I say, hoping to give her some reassurance. Kat rifles around in her bag for her phone.
I'll be back, she says, heading outside. Do you think it was the right thing to do? Asks Lizzie, her eye caught by someone in the far corner of the lounge.
I hope so, I say, following her eyeline. My stomach lurches as I see who Lizzie is looking at.
Is that...
Leo, I whisper. Despite the noise of the bar, Leo seems to hear me because at that moment he looks up, immediately catching my gaze and acknowledging me with a nod.
Who's he with?
Asks Lizzie. Britt, I say. She nudges Leo to gain back his attention and no doubt ask who it is he's staring at.
Looks like they're coming over, says Lizzie.
I grab my drink and hope to God my hair isn't a complete disaster. In the words of Richard Curtis, fuck, fuck, fuck. Hi, he says, somehow conveying all his American charm and swagger into just one syllable. How are you?
Fine, I say, over brightly. You?
Okay, he says.
I don't know if you've met Britt. Britt, this is Bea.
Hi. How are you?
She says, shaking my hand.
Fine,
I say, astonished that her voice in no way matches her appearance. She sounds sweet and likable, not at all as I imagined her, distant and spiky.
This is Lizzie.
Leo did her wedding photos.
Oh, yeah. I'd hoped to help out on that shoot, but I wasn't able. I saw the images. You looked beautiful.
Thanks, says Lizzie, finishing her drink.
What brings you here?
Leo asks.
Aunt Jane married Tom this afternoon. We're having a sort of post-wedding bash.
You?
We're having one last London drink before heading home tomorrow, says Britt.
Home? She doesn't know it, but it would have been kinder to have blindsided me in the stomach.
We leave for California tomorrow, she says.
For how long?
For good. She smiles widely like the cat who got the cream, while I search Leo's eyes for confirmation.
B, Leo, why don't you get some more drinks in? I'd love another and I'm sure B would too, says Lizzie,
sensing my devastation. Given that all hope of us being together has just disappeared down the proverbial plug hole. She pats the chair beside her for Britt to sit down.
Sure, I say, glad of the intervention and the opportunity to collect my thoughts. I follow Leo through the throng of bodies to the bar. Everything from the back of his tousled hair to his strong, broad shoulders and his pert backside is begging to be touched.
Sorry, B,
he shouts as we wait to be served. It's hard to hear him properly over the music.
I wanted to tell you, to say goodbye.
It's fine.
I hope the fact that I have to shout helps hide the desolation in my voice.
You don't owe me anything.
I do, he says, the busyness of the bar causing his body to press close to mine. If it weren't for Britt, I'd be making the most of the situation and moving even closer.
You're definitely leaving for good.
He leans in to speak into my ear, and I shiver. I never want to say never, but for now, yes.
So, you and Britt are serious this time?
Yes, he says. But as he does, his eyes fix on mine in a way that doesn't correspond with his answer. He looks as if he's thinking about kissing me, and my heart pounds in my chest. In that moment, it's as if time slows. The rest of the world still spinning around us, and before I know it, he's leaning in, his lips on mine, kissing me. Sharply, I pull away, pushing him back, and time seems to speed up, the noise of the club at full force again.
You can't do this! It's not fair to Britt or me!
A glance towards Britt and Lizzie tells me Britt couldn't have seen. There are too many people in the way. But still I feel awful. Guilt and anger surging through me.
You're right. I know I'm right, I say,
my temper flaring. It's not often I feel cross, but there's something about Leah's attitude tonight that reminds me of my father. That sense of entitlement, that he might have his cake and eat it.
If you're choosing Britt, then choose her. Don't eye me like something you fancy another piece of.
Goodbye, Leo. I hope things work out for you.
B, wait. It's not that straightforward, he calls as I turn on my heels to leave.
I head outside for air, brushing past Lizzie and Britt, deep in conversation, and Hannah and Remy still tearing up the dance floor.
How could I be so stupid, I think,
battling past a gaggle of women, 10 years younger than me and dressed in impossibly small pieces of clothing. It feels as if someone's holding my head under the water. And I'm only released when I push the door to the club open and the warm evening air rushes into my lungs. I cross the road and sit on the ground, next to a recycling bin outside Cafe Nero. I'm so past the stage of caring if my party dress gets mucky. My brain feels as if it's on spin cycle. Did I really think there was still hope of us being together? How could I let him kiss me when he's with Britt? Does that make me as bad as him?
B! What's going on?
Asks Kat, crossing the road to join me. Leo's moving back to America. With Britt.
Ouch. That's got to hurt, she says,
squatting down to join me. We must look a real sight, the two of us in our wedding gear, slumped beside the trash. I pinch the bridge of my nose until it aches.
I feel like such an idiot.
Why?
Because I knew before I slept with him that he was a player. He admitted as much to me. I wish I'd confessed this to Kat before now.
I allowed myself to believe that I was different. That we had some kind of connection. That he didn't have with any of the other wedding girls he slept with.
Turns out I was just another notch on his belt.
I'm sorry, B.
He is really nice and super cool. I can totally see why you fell for him. You shouldn't feel bad. Maybe I'm just a poor judge of character.
I genuinely thought he was different. He told me he didn't want to be like his father, that he didn't want to ditch people selfishly. I respected that, you know? I thought he had integrity, that he was loyal. I thought, at last, I've met someone who understands what it was to have a shift as a father. I thought I found someone who might go out of his way to do good by me. But then, just now, he tried to come on to me when he's with Brit. A thought pops into my mind. One I don't really want to entertain, but find myself voicing regardless. I can't help wondering if I'm more like my mother than I thought. How do you mean? Not being able to see when someone isn't good for me. People make bad choices, Bea. Cat's tone is so full of regret that it makes me snap out of my upset. Cat? Only now do I see that her face is puffy and her eyes bloodshot. What's going on? Is it Henry? She nods, casting her eyes sideways to meet mine. I just called him and pretty much forced him to tell me. Turns out the rumor was more than just gossip. Henry was seeing someone else. Yep. Her name's Lucille. She says Lucille in a phony French accent. Yikes. I pause, trying to think of something comforting to say. Bet she smells of garlic. Cat lets out a short laugh, shaking her head in dismay. Do you know when it started? I ask. I'm not sure. It might be best not to know. And is it over? He says it is. I'm so sorry. I put my hand over hers. Even though I've always imagined it possible, the news still comes as a surprise. So when you're doubting your ability to judge character, just remember, at least you weren't about to marry a two-timing wanker. At least you only slept with one. I laugh, wryly. You had your suspicions. True. But I allowed him to lie to me. You didn't allow it. He's the one to blame here, Kat, not you. Maybe, she says, with a shrug. I lean my head back against the warm concrete of the building. I'm sorry I didn't tell you when Lizzie first mentioned it. I wanted to, but she was worried it would do more damage if it wasn't true. That's why I kept suggesting you confront him. I'm not mad about that. I'm not even that mad about him shagging someone else. I'm just mad about the lying. I should have realized at Lizzie's wedding when he said Hannah shouldn't tell her grandparents about Remy, that he had a problem with the truth. Hindsight is a wonderful thing, I say, watching a pigeon peck at a McDonald's box. What are you going to do? There's not much I can do. I guess I have to call off the wedding. Is that what you want? Cat leans her head back too, looking up to the sky. What I want is for all of this to be a dream, and for Henry to be the man I thought he was, not some screwed-up version I don't know. Pretty much exactly what I feel about Leo, I think. But I don't say it because Cat was prepared to marry Henry, whereas Leo was really little more than a figment of my imagination. Her problem puts mine nicely into perspective. Come on, I say, getting myself up and holding out my hand to her. Let's go drink our entire blood volume in cocktails. Bloody great idea, she says, taking my hand to get up, the two of us going back into the club, our arms around each other in sisterly solidarity. Chapter 19. For a few days after the kiss, my emotions swayed between feeling gutted that Leo had left the country for good, clinging on to the idea that if we kissed, there must still be some kind of connection, and feeling angry that he kissed me when he's with Brit, and the lack of loyalty that showed. But mostly I was cross at myself for spending too much time hoping for something that was never going to happen, and misreading his character so badly. In the end, despite the fact that I still fancied the pants off of him, I realized it was fruitless to hanker after him anymore, and that it was far more important to channel my energy into something I could control. Just 3 more weeks to get this finished by the festival, I tell myself, looking at the growing collection of jewelry laid out on the bed in Lizzie's old room. Over the last month, the space has developed into a functioning studio with a work table, a shelving unit housing all my supplies, and the bed being used as a display area.
Most nights after work, I've been putting in a few hours, managing to create a couple of pairs of fringed earrings or a bracelet each evening. My obsession with Native American beadwork, one I've had since Aunt Jane brought me back a beaded bracelet from Arizona when I was about 9, has led to a bold collection of brickwork pattern in turquoises, reds, and gold. I'm trying desperately to create at least 50 pieces to sell at the festival, and since the kiss, I've been powering through pieces like there's no tomorrow. Trouble is, pieces keep selling through my website, so it's a near impossible challenge to keep up. And to make matters worse, Suki, my business course tutor, tasked us with promoting our business models through social media, and now I've got several hundred followers all champing at the bit for new designs. And all of this on top of work. Bev says most mornings I look as if I've spent the night in the desert, exhausted and disoriented from lack of sleep, sitting up half the night, threading and looping and knotting. The other day, Simon came by for a meeting with his dad and asked me if I'd been down with a stomach virus. No, I said, too tired to be offended. Why do you ask?
You've lost your usual glow.
I told him I'd been putting in lots of hours, trying to build a collection.
Well, he said, completely underwhelmed. Don't overdo it. Better to be healthy than...
He tailed off, uncertain what it is that I get from making jewelry.
Happy and fulfilled? I offered.
Right, he said, smiling, sounding supportive but his eyes sporting a slightly puzzled expression.
Better get on. Dad's got something he wants to discuss.
Sure, I said, getting back to my own work, realizing again that for all Simon and I were good together, it was never going to work long term. I'm in the process of attaching a fishhook wire to my latest pair of earrings when the doorbell rings, and I remember that Jessica, the lady from Aunt Jane's wedding, is popping round for a viewing.
Bugger, I say, getting up from my desk and realizing that the house is a pigsty.
All the late nights spent working has meant little time to clean and tidy. It looks almost as bad as when Lizzie lived here. I dash downstairs, gathering stray bits of laundry and shoving them into the laundry cupboard. Then I align my shoes at the door before answering.
Hi, Jessica. Welcome,
I say, super cheerily, hoping that what the house lacks in neatness I might make up for in warmth.
Hi, Bea. It's so nice to see you, she says as I usher her in. And you, how have you been?
Good. She looks up at the coving and ceiling rose, and I hope she doesn't notice the cobwebs. I've been enjoying the cricket, when I'm not at work, that is.
Great!
Does that mean I'd lose the use of the telly for most of the summer?
Let me show you the living room.
It's just beautiful. She casts her eye round the room, either not noticing or at least politely ignoring the design magazines and coffee cups abandoned about the place.
I love your throws and choice of lamps. It feels really cozy.
Thank you, I say, thinking how nice it is to have someone who appreciates the place for what it is, rather than wanting it as a creche or boarding house. Come through and I'll show you the rest. We head into the dining room, the table covered in boxes of wire and thread.
Sorry about the mess. I've been super busy. If I'm honest, I sort of forgot you were coming. I haven't had a chance to tidy.
Oh, don't worry about it, she says with a laugh. I'm more interested in the feel of the place. And this room feels full of happiness. We have had a lot of laughs in here, I say, impressed that she should pick up on that, and taking her into the kitchen. The kitchen is small, but everything's here.
I know it's bad, but I'm more of a ready meal girl.
You know how it is. Once you're through with work, it's just easier to dash into M&S and grab a carbonara.
Praise the Lord, the woman is sweet and kind, and all she needs is a fork.
Well, that just leaves upstairs. After I've shown her my room and the bathroom, I show her Lizzie's old room. Don't be put off by my work stuff. That will all be cleared, if, that is, you want the room.
My God, Bea, she says, going over to the bed to look at my work. Have you made all this?
Uh-huh.
It's insanely good. How do you find the time?
It's a good question, I say, with a little laugh. But you've seen the state of the place. It's not as if I've been doing much housework.
You're too hard on yourself,
If I'd made all of this, the dishes would be stacked to the roof and the laundry spilling out the front door.
Well, it's only me to look after, no one else.
What? Things didn't work out with Christopher?
She laughs, and I do too. And I know she'd be the perfect flatmate. Sweet, tidy, funny, a little bit like having Lizzie back. Just without the mess, and probably a few less anecdotes about penguins seeing patients.
So that's it, I say, leading her back out to the landing and downstairs.
You've seen all there is to see. Take your time making up your mind, there's no rush.
I don't have to think about it. I definitely like the room. Nothing I've seen compares to this, and it's half the price of most places.
Oh, right, I say, feeling caught on the hop. Because despite Jessica probably being the near-perfect flatmate, I'm hesitant. When Lizzie moved out, it was hard, but I don't know. Over the last 4 to 6 weeks, I've really grown used to it. It's nice not to feel guilty if the dishes aren't done. I like not having to think about when to use the bathroom, and most of all, I've become accustomed to having Lizzie's old room as a place of work. Trouble is, if I want to transition from hobby jewelry maker to professional designer, I'm going to have to give up my job. And I can't do that if I'm paying rent on both rooms.
Or maybe you have someone else in mind, she says, picking up on my hesitancy.
No, no, that's not it. Unlike with the others, with Jessica, I decide honesty is the best policy. I need to get my head around not having a workspace. I hadn't realized how important it had become until now.
I understand, she says.
If you want a flatmate and a workspace, then perhaps we could screen off part of the living room. It seems pretty big just for two people.
That's a really good idea, I say, releasing the latch on the door. Can you give me a few days to think it over?
Of course.
Call me, yes, she says, stepping out front.
I'll do that. Thanks for coming, I say, waving her off, feeling a little guilty about making her wait for an answer.
How long did it take for you to get shot of that hangover? I ask Kat, who's come round for a Henry debrief.
It's been 10 days since Aunt Jane's wedding and that eventful night at Mahiki's. And what with work and jewellery making and Kat dealing with Henry, it's the first real opportunity that we've had to chat it all through.
It seemed to go on for days, she says, taking a seat in the minuscule courtyard, which is only really big enough for the wheelie bins and an abandoned barbecue. Though I suspect some of that was the emotional hangover. I hand her a coconut magnum and sit down beside her on a deck chair.
What's Henry had to say for himself?
That it was a drunken one-night stand. That he's beyond sorry. That we shouldn't let one lapse in judgment stand in the way of our future together.
The chocolate of my ice cream gives way with a satisfying snap. So he wants the wedding to go ahead?
Yep, says Kat, catching a drip of coconut cream. He certainly does. He's been pretty persistent about that.
And what do you think?
I think lots about that.
She pauses for a moment, from both chat and ice cream, collecting her thoughts.
I think he's a bloody cheat to think that I might still agree to marry him. I also think he's right. Why should one mistake cost us all we planned together?
I sit quietly, allowing her to work through her thoughts.
I want him to have some kind of price to pay for what he's done, but I don't want me to be that price.
Sounds fair.
And I'd like to know for certain that his regret is sincere, that it won't happen again. But how can I ever know that?
Her eyes will me to answer, to fix it all for her.
It's not something you can ever know.
No one can. Not even in a marriage where two people have been faithful for decades.
Ultimately, I guess, it comes down to faith in each other. And trust.
And what if the trust can't be restored? Won't I always be expecting the worst?
I think if you expect the worst, he's likely to deliver it.
But if I expect the best, then you might get it.
Might, she says, drifting back into her thoughts.
What does your heart tell you? I ask, when we've both had some thinking time.
Marry or not?
I have no idea.
And if Henry wasn't being persistent, if he had walked away, then I'd move on. I give her a look that suggests she might have found her answer.
But doesn't his persistence, his willingness to fight for us, prove something?
Maybe, I say, with a slight shrug, not wanting to lean either way, knowing Kat has to make this decision alone. All I can do is be a sounding board.
Anyway, she says, returning to her ice cream. What about you? How are you coping with the idea of Leo moving back to America?
Oh, I'm fine, I say.
Am I?
You should see how many pieces I've managed to create this week now that I'm absolutely 1,000% sworn off men.
That's great, Bea. I'm so pleased that something good has come out of it.
For a while there, I was worried you were falling for a bit of a player. But don't be put off men completely, because I was thinking.
What? I ask, detecting that tone in her voice that tells me she's got something afoot.
Why don't we invite Sebastian along to the festival? He was really nice and not exactly hard on the eye.
I hesitate, not that keen on the idea.
I don't know.
Oh, go on. It would just be a bit of fun. Nothing serious.
We could all do with a bit of cheering up. I'm not really up for it, feeling too tired and fed up with men to be bothered. But there's something about it that seems to light Kat up, and she's right. We could all use a bit of fun.
Go on, then, I say, devouring a big chunk of ice cream.
Thanks, Bea, she says,
already digging out her phone, leaving me wondering what I've let myself in for and wishing, despite myself, that it was Leo, not Sebastian, who was going.
Apollo Music Festival, 3rd to 5th August, New Grove Farm, Gloucestershire. Saturday, 4th August, Carburetta, and many more acts to be announced.
Chapter 20. I'd be lying if I said camping in a muddy field with several thousand other people had my name written all over it, but credit to Lizzie, she has gone out of her way to make it as comfortable as possible. She's hired a gigantic bell tent with four double beds and a wood-burning stove in the middle. We still have to share a toilet, and I'm not even going to think about with how many other people, but as camping goes, it's not that bad.
Bagsy the bed furthest from the entrance, says Kat, throwing her rucksack onto the bed.
Guess that means I'm sleeping here too, I say, putting my bag beside hers on the surprisingly soft mattress. Hannah and Remy take the bed nearest the door. Aunt Jane and Tom, just back from their honeymoon, decide on the one next to theirs, leaving Sebastian, next to mine, in a bed of his own, where he sits to slip off his shoes. I've learnt my lesson about sleeping with men I barely know, and it's not about to happen again anytime soon, regardless of how keen the girls might be for the two of us to hook up.
Where's Lizzie going to sleep? Hannah asks.
She's in the band's trailer with Jack, I say.
Ooh, that's cool, says Remy, who's been tickled pink since I agreed that Sebastian should come along this weekend.
Not that I'm certain why I agreed, other than the fact that I refuse to be stuck in the mud about Leo. That thing Aunt Jane said about me eliminating people too quickly has also been bothering me. I figure if I'm to give anyone a chance, I could do a lot worse than Sebastian.
I slept in a band's trailer once, says Aunt Jane, who, rather wonderfully, has embraced the whole shorts and wellies look, even if her shorts are a bit more 1940s girl guide than Kate Moss hot pants.
Really? I ask. When?
Mid-60s, I imagine. I couldn't have been more than 21.
Who were the band? Kat is perched on the end of her bed, listening in.
I don't remember its name. They were quite tame by today's standards. Even so, I seem to remember we had a little fun.
What sort of fun, Aunt Jane? Hannah looks genuinely shocked.
Probably best we don't ask, I say, preferring to leave Aunt Jane's wild days to my imagination. Who wants to help me set up my jewelry stand outside the tent?
Kat winkles her nose apologetically.
I need to call Henry. We've some stuff to sort out.
It's been over 4 weeks since she found out about Henry's one-night stand, and she still hasn't made a decision about whether to go ahead with the wedding.
And I've planned a little outdoor yoga session for Aunt Jane and Tom,
says Remy.
Really?
I ask, incredulous at the thought of my great-aunt stretching and bending in public.
Tom and I made a resolution on our honeymoon to try as many new things as we could while we're still able. Neither of us has been to a festival before, and neither of us have tried yoga. So we're giving it a go, even if I do dislocate a hip in the process.
I'll be gentle, says Remy. And if Anna can do it, then so can you.
Hey, Anna cries in mock indignation.
You know she's right, I say, laughing. Anna barely mastered a forward roll at school. She's about as supple as an 80-year-old tortoise.
I resent that.
I'll have you know I've become quite nimble since meeting Remy.
Have you indeed, I say, really not believing her.
Yes, I have. Remy, do you mind if I crash the lesson?
Of course not. The more the merrier.
Hannah sticks her tongue out at me playfully.
Looks like Sebastian is your only helper.
I would like to help, if you don't mind,
he says.
Why would I mind?
After all, there's nothing quite like a good-looking Frenchman to attract a few extra punters.
My stall is little more than a card table with a display board of bracelets, earrings, and necklaces. But despite its modest scale, I feel a huge sense of satisfaction at what I've achieved in just a few months.
You are very patient, non?
Asks Sebastian, positioning his fold-out chair next to mine.
What makes you say that?
Your work, it is, how you say, fiddly.
His pronunciation of fiddly makes me laugh.
Yes, I suppose it is. But I like the attention to detail and creating something unique.
It would be very boring for me.
I laugh, vaguely outraged.
You don't mince your words, do you?
What does this mean?
It means you say what you think, even if it might offend.
Are you offended?
He asks, a concerned look in his eyes.
Not at all. We can't all have the same passions.
What do you like to do? I ask, making minuscule adjustments to the stall.
I like to travel to spectacular places like Iceland, Peru. I have a trip booked to New Zealand next year.
And when you're not traveling?
Then I like to play football at the weekend, basketball and judo in the week. I run to work and go to the gym at lunch.
Gosh, that's a lot of exercise, I say, stifling a yawn.
Which exercise do you like?
The spectating from the couch kind? I swim from time to time. Can't actually remember the last time I went. I've never really found a sport that fits me.
It's probably because of your body shape.
Really?
Where the hell is he going with this?
Sure. You are short with big breasts. You're not fast or agile. Maybe weightlifting would suit you.
An enormous guffaw erupts from within me, causing me to spit out my tea.
Why weightlifting?
I ask, still laughing, and wiping my mouth on my sleeve.
Your center of gravity is low.
He might be gorgeous, but I'm beginning to see why Seb is still single.
Swimming is also good for you.
Because of my buoyancy aids.
He shoots me a puzzled look. I point to my breasts. These help me float.
Exactly, he says, joining me in laughing. They are big, buoyancy aids.
We have to rein in our giggles when a couple of potential customers stop by. They're younger than me, and far cooler than I ever was, but they're immediately drawn to the collection, cooing over the boldest designs. The blonde girl tries on several of the beaded bracelets, holding out her arm to admire them.
These would look so cool layered up with silver bangles. Her friend turns to me, holding up one of my favorites.
You should make them really wide, more like wristbands and bracelets. I'd wear them all the time.
I could commission a piece for you, if you like, I say, handing her my card, loving her idea.
Could you?
Sure.
Just select the colors and patterns you like from my website, then tell me how wide you'd like it.
Amazing, she says, already on her phone, scrolling through my designs.
And I'll take 10 of these, says the blonde, pointing to the bracelets. Just a random selection.
It feels good, no?
says Sebastian, once the girls have gone and I've squirreled the cash into my money pouch.
It feels bloody amazing,
I say, beaming from ear to ear, more thrilled than he could know. As I'm rearranging the contents of the store, a sound from within the tent causes me to turn, and I find Kat, her phone pressed against her ear, gesticulating to the empty tent.
Anna said she is having a tough time,
says Sebastian, noticing my look of elation turn to concern. And for once, there's nothing I can do. In years gone by, I've always been able to do something to cheer Kat up. Ice cream and milkshakes when primary school got tough, Haribo and Coke during school exams, chips and alcohol when revising for uni finals. For once in our lives, this isn't something that food or drink or even the world's largest stack of pancakes is going to sort out. For once, she's going to have to tough it out on her own.
Just being her friend is enough, says Sebastian, sincere and sensitive in his response,
his eyes full of tenderness. Yes, I say, the softness of his gaze pulling me in. Despite the weightlifting comment, I can still see his appeal. Just then I catch sight of Lizzie, hurrying down the avenue of tents, waving at me.
Isn't this great?
She says, breathless from her walk and holding onto her straw pork pie hat.
I knew this was exactly what we needed.
I can't deny it. It is nice to get out of the city.
Hi, Seb.
She greets him with three kisses.
Where's everyone else?
I gesture towards a small enclave where Remy is conducting a yoga session for Hannah, Tom and Jane, and, as it happens, a few others who've tagged on. Remy is positioned in a perfect triangle, feet wide apart, arms perpendicular to the ground. The others are in various imitations of the pose, some more successfully than others.
Is Hannah's spine fused?
Asks Lizzie, and I laugh. Despite her protestations about being quite nimble these days, it's really very hard to see any difference from the Hannah of old, who never could touch her toes despite being able to run a marathon in under 3.5 hours.
Check out Tom and Aunt Jane. They're totally on it, I say.
I expect bedroom gymnastics has increased their flexibility.
Lizzie, I cry, trying to erase the image that jumps into my mind.
Don't be such a prude, Bee. Older people can have a healthy sex life too.
Moving on, I say quickly, changing the subject. When's Jack set?
This evening, 9:30. They're totally psyched about it.
I'll bet. A band's first time on the main stage is a big deal. Their trajectory is incredible.
Right, it is, says Lizzie,
the excitement slightly edging from her voice, causing me to wonder, not for the first time, what's up with the girl? Lizzie was quick to whisk Remy and Hannah away after the yoga class, leaving me with Seb at the stall, Kat still on the phone, and Aunt Jane and Tom having a late morning catnap. Aunt Jane might have taken the downward dog in her stride, but I'm worried that Tom might never recover. Word seemed to be spreading about the stall, and over the course of the next hour or so, Seb and I were inundated with crop-top teenagers, glitter-painted 20-somethings, and some of the older bohemian crowd. I heard about you down at the main stalls, says a middle-aged woman, pushing her Armani shades up into her head. She's dressed casually in denim shorts and a cheesecloth top, but the designer wellies, knuckle-duster diamond, an expensive haircut tell me that she's either successful in her own right or married to someone wealthy. Thought I'd better come check out what all the fuss is about. It's nothing really, just a little hobby, I say, anxious that she might be festival police, if there is such a thing, about to fine me for not having a license. It doesn't look like just a hobby. Some of this is very detailed. What's your background? Oh, you know, graduated art college, couldn't afford my rent, got a job, stopped making stuff. What changed? It's a long story. I figure she doesn't need to hear about the girl's mad notion of all of us marrying in 1 year, and me then realizing how trapped it made me feel in all areas of my life, not just my relationship with Simon. But it got me creating again, pushing for my dream of becoming a designer. Whatever happened, it's clearly ignited something strong. Your work really captures the current zeitgeist. I nod sagely. I don't know what that means, but I'll go with it. She reaches her hand out to me. Hilary Bentham.
Hi, I'm Bea.
Bea Henshaw.
Bea Henshaw, she says. That's a strong name. I could work with that.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Forgive me, I haven't said what I do. I'm the buying director at Whimsy and White.
I must stand gaping for an inappropriate amount of time. Whimsy and White is one of my favourite boutique chains, and they're big on pushing independent designers. Because eventually Seb has to nudge me back to life.
That's impressive,
I gabble.
And I'm certain my team would be interested in considering your collection. Do you have a card?
I do. My fingers seem to turn to butter as I fumble around for it in my bag. In the end, it's Sebastian who hands one to her.
Very nice to meet you, Bea.
I'll be in touch, she says, returning her sunglasses to her face and walking away.
Did the buying director of Whimsy and White just imply she might be interested in buying my work?
I ask Seb, once Hilary is out of earshot.
He puts up his hand for me to high-five.
Oui, c'est vrai,
he says, clasping my hand and giving me a very unromantic hug.
Maybe your dream will come true.
Maybe it will, I reply, imagining handing in my notice at work and dreaming of designing full-time for a living.
Chapter 21 Who fancies a game of truth or dare?
Asks Kat, once we've finished our dinner of baked potatoes and bananas cooked in the ashes of the stove, and we're waiting to head down to the main stage to see Carburetta's set.
I haven't played that game in decades, proclaims Aunt Jane, who's putting on her cardi, the evening air beginning to cool. Count me in.
And me, says Tom,
warming his yoga-tired muscles by the fire, his toes wiggling.
Do we have two more takers? Kat asks.
Sebastian takes a seat next to Tom.
I will play.
And me,
sings Remy, her hand in the air.
Hannah, Bea, Lizzie, majority rules, says Kat,
tearing up a piece of paper into bits and handing them out.
Everyone write down one question and one dare, and then place them in Tom's hat if it's a truth and Lizzie's if it's a dare.
I feel drinks are required for this, says Hannah.
She passes round cans of G&T and lager.
I draw up a chair by the stove, taking a G&T.
Couldn't agree more.
Not for me, thanks, says Lizzie, positioning herself next to me.
You okay? I ask.
I just don't want to be drunk when Jack's on stage. I don't want to forget his big moment.
Jack doesn't know how lucky he is, I tell her, reaching over to rub her arm.
No, you're right, she says, staring in the flames. He doesn't.
Before I can challenge Lizzie on what she means, Kat is up in the middle of the huddle, shaking the hats from side to side.
Who wants to go first?
Oh, go on then. I will, says Hannah.
Truth or dare?
Truth.
Kat pulls a question from Tom's hat theatrically.
If you had to choose between going naked or having your thoughts appear in bubbles above your head for everyone to read, which would you choose?
Boo! Cries Aunt Jane. Too easy!
Is it? I say, with a chuckle.
Both seem terrifying to me.
I'd go naked, says Hannah, which is met with general cheers and whistles.
Why?
I ask.
Because I wouldn't be much use to my clients if the opposition could read my thoughts.
I'm not sure you'd be much use to your clients in the altogether, I say, laughing at the thought of Hannah in court in the buff.
Who's next? Asks Kat, and Aunt Jane raises her hand. Truth or dare?
Dare,
says Aunt Jane, her eyes wide in anticipation, a decision that is met with a collective, ooh.
Eat a mouthful of crackers and then try to whistle.
Now that's too easy, says Hannah, as Kat hands Aunt Jane the crackers.
We sit compelled by the sight of Aunt Jane methodically pushing crackers into her mouth. If it were me, I'd get the giggles and not be able to do it. But Aunt Jane, composed as she is, troughs them in, then slowly, carefully, purses her lips to blow.
Jane!
Cries Tom, when he's showered in cracker crumbs. She leans in closer, a cheeky, wicked look in her eye, and blows again, so that Tom is left with crumbs inside his ears and all over his hair.
"Get away with you, woman,"
he says, his arms flailing about trying to get rid of her.
"How can you do that without laughing?" I ask.
She masticates quietly, quite soberly, until the mouthful is gone, when she breaks into a giant smile, arms aloft with a satisfied, "Ta-da!" "Very impressive, Aunt Jane," says Cat.
"A little too impressive,"
Tom grumbles, though the twinkle in his eye belies his irritation.
"Your turn next," Aunt Jane says to Tom. "Truth or dare?"
"Truth."
Cat removes a small piece of paper from the hat and reads aloud.
"What is your guilty pleasure?"
"Intriguing," I say, an eyebrow raised at Aunt Jane in curiosity. "He'll probably say the newspaper in bed on a Sunday morning."
"Well, yes, but,"
says Tom, and a hum of interest grows around the tent.
"I do also like..."
He hesitates, uncertain whether to tell or not.
"Go on, Tom," says Hannah. "You're among friends."
"I wouldn't be so sure," says Aunt Jane, a naughty glint in her eye.
"What is it, Tom?" I urge.
"I do quite like having a bath, and then..."
"No!"
says Aunt Jane, reaching over to place a hand over his mouth.
"Stop right there, I won't allow it."
"Hurry, Tom, tell us."
From behind Aunt Jane's hand, he mumbles.
"Slipping on your aunt's silk dressing robe and climbing into bed beside her."
"Oh, Tom,"
says Aunt Jane, removing her hand, perfectly mortified.
"How could you?"
"What?"
he exclaims, a wide smile on his face.
"I do."
"Love it," says Cat, after our laughter has died down. "There's nothing like a male septuagenarian in a lady's dressing gown." "Who's next?"
"Can I go next with a dare?"
I ask, spurred on by Tom's confession.
"Okay,"
she says, reading one from the hat.
"Yeet, this is horrid. Smell the feet of everyone in the room and rank them from best to worst."
"Ooh, that's cool," says Remy.
"Very," I say, getting down on my hands and knees and doing a cursory inspection.
But easy in the end. Hannah definitely has the worst, and Remy has almost no odour at all.
"Thanks very much, Bee," says Hannah, her voice loaded with sarcasm. "I think it's fair to say I won't hear the last of that for some time to come."
"It is true. You do have stinky feet,"
says Remy with a laugh.
"But you know I love you all the same."
"Moving swiftly on," says Cat when Remy goes in for a full PDA.
"Who's left?"
"Sebastian," I say.
"Truth or dare?"
"Truth,"
he says, and Cat offers him the hat.
"Do I fancy anyone in the tent?"
he reads, and a light blush colours his cheeks. Aunt Jane's eyes dart towards mine, believing his crush to be me, but I have an idea of my own.
"Well, do you?"
presses Cat. Seb raises his eyes slowly towards her, and with a quiet intensity he slowly says,
"Yes."
"Who?"
asks Cat, astonished, she too looking at me.
"The question only asks if I do, it doesn't say who."
"Smart ass,"
says Cat, a cheeky smile on her lips and a flirtatious glint in her eye. I can't remember the last time I saw her look that way at Henry.
"Lizzie, truth or dare?"
"Truth."
It's only now that I realise Lizzie hasn't contributed to the game so far, which is very unlike her. She's usually crazy for it.
"Ooh,"
says Cat, intrigued by the question. "Are you currently keeping a secret from someone in the group?" Lizzie's delay in answering causes the mood in the tent to shift from light-hearted to something more serious. Everyone's eyes are on Lizzie, who's sitting quietly staring into the fire.
"Lizzie?"
I ask.
"Are you?" "I need to get out of here,"
she says, pushing back her chair.
"Ooh,"
says Hannah, her voice crescendoing, the effects of the G&T kicking in. I shoot her a look to be quiet. Lizzie's clearly not in the mood for being teased.
All right, says Kat, regaining our attention once Lizzie has gone.
I wonder if I should go after her, but my hunch is that she prefers some time on her own.
Only two more left in the hat. Whose go is it?
It's mine, says Remy. I'll have a truth.
All righty. If you had to choose between B and me, which of us would you go out with?
B, Remy says, quick as a flash.
Take your time to think about it, why don't you? Says Hannah with a scandalized laugh.
The choice wasn't between you and B, says Remy, stroking Hannah's arm.
But even if it had been, she probably would have chosen me, I say, enjoying poking at Hannah's wounds.
Children,
says Aunt Jane, clearing her throat, and we all fall into line.
And last but not least, says Kat,
producing the final slip of paper from Lizzie's hat.
A dare for me.
She holds the piece up and reads it to herself, her expression turning from one of glee to trepidation.
What is it, Kat?
I ask.
What's the dare?
Kiss Sebastian, she says, quiet as a mouse.
Drumroll, says Hannah,
starting a drrrr. The rest of us joining in and drumming our fingers and feet too until there's a swell of noise in the tent. Kat kneels down in front of Sebastian, placing her hands on his cheeks, giggling nervously. Seb's eyes dance over hers, Kat's are focused on his lips, and then slowly she leans in, and he does too, and they kiss, a kiss that is more tender than hurried. The kiss doesn't end there, and just as it's developing into something more, and all of us are screeching with surprise and delight, a voice from the entrance of the tent shouts, "What the fuck is going on here?" Kat turns sharply.
Henry,
she gasps, pulling away from Seb and getting up.
What are you doing here?
I thought it would be a good opportunity to get things back on track. He stares at Sebastian. Guess I was wrong. If there was such a thing as a communal wince, we'd all be partaking in it right now. I've never seen so many people dissipate to take care of unnecessary chores in my life. We should go elsewhere, says Kat, ushering Henry away from the tent.
B, apologize to Lizzie for me, will you?
Of course. Take your time, I say, watching them leave.
I'm so excited for you, Beatrice, says Aunt Jane on the walk to the main stage,
the rest of the group walking ahead of us in the faded light, everyone still a little shell-shocked from Henry's arrival.
Maybe Hillary will propel you towards being a famous jewelry designer after all.
Let's not jump the gun, Aunt Jane. She may not call. For now, I'm still Sir Hugo's assistant, I say. Though secretly, all afternoon, I've been imagining handing in my notice and working from home developing designs for Hillary.
How is Sir Hugo?
Driving me mad with his increasing forgetfulness.
And Simon?
Full of chat about what he and Edith are up to. I don't think it'll be long until they get engaged.
Good heavens, that's fast, she says,
wearing a fantastic look of amazement.
I never doubted your decision to break up with Simon. But imagining you engaged to him and marrying in pomp and ceremony really does solidify the fact that you made the right choice. Can you imagine? You walking down the aisle of a large church in a giant meringue of a dress.
I know, I say, hoping to sound as if the idea is preposterous, but one way or another, I end up sounding unconvinced. For all my designs to put men out of my life, I find myself questioning if splitting up with Simon was the right decision.
B, what's the matter?
Nothing. Because how can there be? How can I find myself doubting my breakup with Simon when I've just taken a huge step towards fulfilling a life goal?
Nothing my eye. Come on, tell your Aunt Jane what's going on.
As we trudge through the mud towards the main stage, I try to recall my motivation behind the breakup. I can't quite remember why I threw away someone so good and kind and reliable. Aunt Jane takes my hand and gives it a squeeze. Because the spark had gone. But lots of people have successful marriages that are built on other things.
like friendship and respect and loyalty.